hopefully everyone is back from a coffee break. So it's a big enough room with like so few people. So, you know, hopefully we can have a more, you know, cozy discussion. So to get started, this talk is about SAMHSA 1.0 and the journey of how we scaled stream processing at LinkedIn. So in terms of the agenda for this talk, we'll begin with stream processing scenarios at LinkedIn. We'll give a sense of the scale in terms of stream processing at LinkedIn, what specific use cases exist for stream processing at LinkedIn, and then we'll share our journey so far in building SAMHSA 1.0 as a product. So in terms of the various phases of building SAMHSA 1.0, we'll first start with how we started with the initial processing model. Then we start with how we evolve richer features like stateful processing. And then we'll give an overview of how the SAMHSA API has evolved and how it has helped LinkedIn scale. And lastly, we'll also tackle how we handle deployment of SAMHSA applications at LinkedIn. This is intended to be you know, a lot of practical insights from our own work at LinkedIn. So in terms of the scale that we have three different streaming systems at LinkedIn. We have Kafka, which is obviously a message processing system which originated at LinkedIn as an Apache project. We have Brooklyn, which is our change capture system. When we say change capture, what we mean is there are a bunch of databases that track user activity on the site and a lot of events of interest happening in those databases. So let's imagine I have a connections database, right? So let's say I send a LinkedIn connect request to someone else. The fact that the two of us are connected might need to be updated in a whole bunch of different systems. For example, a search index might want to rank results differently if two of us are connected as opposed to two of us are not. So likewise, a graph index might want to, you know, re-rank results differently. So the fundamental problem is that of change capture, where a lot of events happen on the website and we are broadcasting events to all downstream systems. So that's what Brooklyn as a system is intended to solve. And we have about 2 trillion messages processed per day with Brooklyn, several thousands of topics that keep getting mirrored, and about 2,000 change capture streams. So a change capture stream is pretty much what I just outlined to you. A lot of events happen in databases, and how do we propagate those events in a reliable manner to a whole bunch of downstream systems? That's essentially the change capture problem. So we outlined two different event sources. One is Kafka, which is our messaging system, and the second is the change capture system, which is Brooklyn, which essentially broadcasts events happening in databases. Then the next question is, how do we process all of these events that get generated all throughout the site? And the answer is Apache SAMHSA for that. So in terms of the scale of SAMHSA, we have about a trillion and a half messages processed per day with about 3,000 applications running in production and about 500 terabytes of state throughout the cluster. So in terms of what scenarios that we power using SAMHSA at LinkedIn, obviously the first and most important one is security. A lot of events happen on the website, and you need to be able to detect, prevent, and block bad actors in real time. Obviously, it's not okay for you to wait for, you know, 2 days before the next bad job starts running. The next scenario we have is around notifications. There are a lot of, when you open LinkedIn on the app, you get a lot of, there's a wide variety of sources for notifications. We want to ensure that whether we are sending you a badge notification versus push notification, whether are we delivering the right notification at the right time to the right people. So these are some problems that we solve using SAMHSA at LinkedIn. Likewise, the problem of topic tagging or classification. A lot of users read articles on the LinkedIn website, and we need to associate each article with its own topic tag. So that's the problem of, we also need visibility into how LinkedIn as a website is performing, which is the problem of site speed, where you want to measure the performance of your website across a bunch of different dimensions, across CDNs, across geography, geography, across individual POP providers and such. So you want to slice and dice different performance characteristics of your website based on different dimensions. SAMS also powers another important use case, what we call as call graph monitoring at LinkedIn. So the idea of call graph monitoring is you have a bunch of different services, each potentially invoking their own downstream services. How do we build a call graph that kind of tells you the entire story of around, hey, what happens to my request from the start all the way to the end of the call, to the leaf node in the call graph tree? So that's the call graph modeling problem. Likewise, we have several other problems that we tackle. We have the use case of index updates, where a lot of events happen on our source of truth systems, and we need to be able to dispatch them reliably to the search systems. So that's the problem of index update. We have this problem of profile standardization, where the idea is, you know, you have a bunch of these standardized titles where, you know, someone calls themselves the chief nerd or whatever. How do we map that to a canonical representation of, you know, hey, you say you're a chief nerd, but in theory or in practice, you're actually a senior software engineer. So let's go with that. So that's the problem of profile standardization. The next obvious problem is activity tracking. At last ApacheCon, I delivered a talk on how we do activity tracking in the LinkedIn feed using SAMSA, if you're interested in a deep dive on that. There's obviously the problem of ad CTR ranking, where you have a bunch of clicks, a bunch of ads. How do we join the two so that we compute CTR? That's an important problem that we have. Obviously, last but not the least, we have the problem of business metrics, where we're interested in, hey, how is the business performing? How are my page views? How are my page clicks? How do they correlate with engagement and such? So these are a class of problems. And across all of these problems, there's a set of common attributes that SAMSA powers. And this is the stream processing stack that enables us to build applications that address these problems. At the topmost layer, you have several data services at LinkedIn. Individual services include profile is a service, feed serving is a service. A lot of these app services exist. That's the application tier. A bunch of events get produced by these services. You know, I consume a LinkedIn feed, that's an event. The feed gets served to me, that's an event. The served feed contains these many updates, that's an event. So you have a bunch of these event sources that get produced, and all of those event sources land up in Kafka, which is our ingestion tier. Likewise, as I said, a lot of these events are also in, you know, they just could not necessarily be in Kafka, but they would translate to database updates, for example. I update my LinkedIn profile. That's a database update, right? The two of us are connected on LinkedIn. That's a database update. So we have a bunch of databases, namely Oracle. We have our own in-house database, which is a key value store, what we call as Espresso. Likewise, we have a bunch of MySQL and AMRI, which is our blob store. We have blogged about all of these in the past. But the idea, the TLDR is there's a bunch of events happening in the website and a bunch of databases that get updated. And we feed all of these events through our change capture system, what we call as Brooklyn. And there are two different sources of streaming data, Kafka and Brooklyn. And once the data is ingested by using Kafka and Brooklyn, SAMSA is kind of like the scalable processing tier that can power all of the rich use cases that we outlined earlier. So once the data has been processed using SAMSA, there are different sinks or output that the data gets emitted to. Typically, you know, in some cases, we output the data to HDFS. In other cases, we output data to analytics stores like Pino, for example, where they can perform further aggregation. We also have our own custom solutions for converting a Kafka topic to a KV store. So essentially, a KV store is just a sequence of updates that happen in a Kafka topic, and you can present them as a view on top of the data that's there on a Kafka topic. So there's this nice duality between streams and tables. So we've built a system called Venice that serves that. But the high-level view over the stack, there are app services, ingest events, two primary sources, Kafka, which is our message bus, and Brooklyn, which is the change capture system. And these events get processed by SAMSA, which is the processing tier. The outputs get stored to a bunch of different sinks, key value stores, messaging. In some cases, the output also goes into other messaging systems. And obviously, we have analytic systems like Pino as well in the picture. So in terms of our journey in building Apache Samza, first we started with investing in a rock solid, robust core. By core, we basically got the essential abstractions of parallelism, fault tolerance, recovery, all of those building blocks we got right. The next logical step after we had a solid core was, hey, it's great for really stateless applications. For example, if you're doing some filtering, if you're doing some map, for example, all those are stateless operations. For example, if you were to do something stateful, like a window count or a join or some other form of aggregation where you need to keep track of state beyond the current message that's being processed. So we built a set of features that power stateful applications. That was our next logical step. In terms of the evolution further, as Samza started gaining more adoption, we wanted to add support for more and more APIs. We did feel that our programming model was fairly low level, and that was hindering our adoption. So we added a robust suite of APIs that couple, you know, that power use cases behind a strong core. And the last but not least, we had support for new deployment models. So currently, you know, there are different deployment mechanisms. Some people use Yarn. Some people bring their own cluster manager using Kubernetes. Some people like to use stream processing as an embedded library. So we powered all of these embedded use cases to kind of close the loop on that. So that's, I'll dive deep into each of these steps in our journey, but that's the overall story. So in terms of the processing model here, the Samza processing model has a native notion of what a source is and what a sink is, and each source is viewed as its own partitioned view of events. For example, Kafka, you know, a partition is viewed as a Kafka partition. In case of Hadoop, a partition is viewed as a HDFS file, for example. In the case of Brooklyn, it has its own notion of partitioning. So essentially, you have a bunch of these sources that have a notion of what their parallelism means, and you have a bunch of these sinks which also have their own notion of what their parallelism means. And then we have, inside a Samza application can be structured as multiple containers. So you have two containers in this Samza application. You can think of each container as a JVM process. And there is one coordinator per Samza application which will manage the lifecycle of all of these containers. So one container fails, the coordinator communicates them using heartbeats, and it can, you know, bring up that container on a different host and assign the partitions to that container. So that's the foundation of our processing model. So define what it means to be a parallel source, define what it means to be a parallel sink, and then define parallelism in terms of scaling containers, where we scale by multiple JVM processes, and there's one process, the coordinator, which communicates with all of them by means of heartbeats and handles failures and such. There's one more level here where each container operates on a bunch of tasks. So think of a task as a logical view of what partition needs to be processed. So there are five incoming partitions here. So, and there are three tasks that we created, which means that each task, we can essentially round robin the partitions across these tasks, and independently, we can scale processing by increasing the number of containers effectively. So think of containers as the physical parallelism, which is the JVM process, and task as the logical parallelism, which allows you to schedule tasks on those JVM processes. So both of these can be scaled independently. So we saw two levels of parallelism, which is at the level of a process level, how you can scale. That's one. Even there's like questions on how do you scale within a process. For that, we have different levels of parallelism to enable us process things parallel. Obviously, the one obvious solution is to parallelize at the level of an individual partition within a JVM process. That's one level of parallelism we have. Even within a partition, there is some, if you have, for example, a partition is just a set of ordered messages. And if you do not have stronger requirements on ordering, we can even do parallelization at the level of a key within that partition. So in that sense, all messages that have the same key would, would be processed in serial. Different keys would be processed in parallel. So essentially, the TLDR is we got the core, the basic core right in SAMHSA, which is the parallelism model and fault tolerance. We offer different levels of parallelism. That's the takeaway there. Parallelism at the level of multiple processes, parallelism at the level of within a process, parallelism within a partition, and parallelism per key, essentially. So all of these enable our applications to scale depending on what their use cases are. All right, so we had a stable core. We gained adoption in a bunch of different companies, LinkedIn, Uber, Slack, TripAdvisor, Intuit, VMware, and Redfin, among others. Then the next question is, how do we build support for stateful processing? As I said, there are two different categories of applications. Simple applications like filtering, map, operate on one message. Stateful, we're talking about joins and windows and such, right? So for these, we basically built a class of features. Let me touch upon them one by one. There are two different modes in which you can use SAMHSA. Obviously, if you're trying to access state, state could be accessed locally or the state could be accessed remote. So in this case, the remote data store could be Cassandra or some remote key value store like Espresso that we have at LinkedIn. If you're talking about local state, it could be you consume an event from Kafka, you've consumed a series of events, and you want to model up to that point in the event stream as a key value store. So essentially, there is this nice duality between streams and tables that we're trying to exploit with local state. So two categories of state, local I/O and remote I/O. And obviously, both of them have different performance characteristics when you do with SAMHSA. So why is state even useful? Well, it's the most fundamental primitive. So any meaningful operation that you can think of, let's say you're building a notification system that wants to meaningfully send out emails, right? For each request that you get, you need to look up that request ID with additional state. For example, it's a user request. You need to look up what city the user is in from. You need to look up the user's profile image. You need to look up some other attributes that you can format the email. So think of it like you get an event, you have a lookup key, you want to look up based on that lookup key across a bunch of downstream systems. This is the fundamental problem of stream to table join, and we are talking about how we do that efficiently. There are two classes of state here again. Obviously, state could be local, in which case, you have events coming in and you build the key value store based on the snapshot of all events that you've seen so far. And obviously there are some cases where state is remote, and we'll get into both of them. So if you do a comparison between local versus remote, here's the numbers for throughput. We published this in VLDB, which is a database conference. So the TLDR is for throughput. Local state is significantly better than our remote solution. So we evaluated a bunch of options across local and remote state, but the TLDR is local state, has high performance primarily because of data locality. Likewise, we did a bunch of numbers for latency. And as you can see, the remote latency numbers are two orders of magnitude higher than a bunch of these options. In memory with some remote logging, with a write-ahead log, on disk in memory, then you have on disk plus using a write-ahead log, then you have on disk plus no cache. Roughly the performance is, it's roughly comparable, but the moment you go remote, the latencies are two orders of magnitude higher. Now we get into, obviously we saw why local state is useful, why remote state is useful, and why remote state performance sucks, and what we can do to make it better. So let's maybe look at the discussion in terms of optimizations for local state. So I said that SAMHSA has containers, and each containers have tasks. And what we added was we added the ability for a key value store on a per task basis. So essentially each task has its own key value store. So think of this key value store as just local on disk key value store. Obviously on disk data is performant. It's high, you know, has very low latencies, high throughput, but the problem is dealing with failures. So if the machine were to go down, on disk data would just get lost. So what we did was we essentially wrote every single mutation that we did to the store to another Kafka topic, which we called as the change log. So think of each store as being associated with the change log for that topic. So the nice thing about this is that you can get extreme performance with local state, but you also get the benefits of recovery if you have a change log. Obviously, we use Kafka as a log compacted topic for the change log, so you can recover from it quickly with log compaction. So that's the optimization one. Local state is good for performance. We exploited that. Obviously, it sucks for failure recovery, for which we change log to Kafka. So there's the other question around, obviously, SAMSA is built to cater applications with extremely minimal downtimes. For example, some of the services are very key to, you know, activity tracking, monitoring, site performance. All of these are really core services that we do not want to go down. For example, let's say the host at which this container was in, let's say that host were to go down. Then the problem becomes, how do I rebootstrap that snapshot of that state efficiently? Obviously, a naive way to do that would be, hey, you already have the data copied in Kafka. Let's start scanning from the Kafka topic from the beginning and then bootstrap the entire snapshot of that state. That works. It's great. No complaints. Only if you have small state. But the problem is, if you have terabytes and terabytes of state, reading, you know, mumble terabytes of data from Kafka would take a ton of time too, and you do not want downtime during that time. So for this, we built a feature, what we call as host affinity. The idea behind host affinity is very simple. So let's say your container failed. You know, the container threw an exception, or you wanted to upgrade, you wanted to do another deployment, in which case you bring everything down and you do a restart. SAMSA will durably track each container, each host, and which store was stored on what host. That way, the next time you redeploy, we can bring you back on the same host that you were previously running on. We call this feature as host affinity because it makes the assignment of hosts to store snapshots, to processing sticky. Essentially, the fundamental idea is to exploit this data locality as much as possible. If you already had a snapshot, if a container was running on host A, it already left some snapshot on host A. The next time the container has to be scheduled on a restart, schedule it on host A. Don't scatter the container throughout the cluster. That's the key advantage. So with this, what happens is all the snapshot is already there on the host during a redeploy. So we only catch up on the delta from Kafka ever since the previous commit of that snapshot, instead of doing a full bootstrap. So we call this feature as incremental checkpointing. So that's one really big benefit that we got with host affinity. So host affinity combined with incremental checkpointing meant that restore times could be extremely minimal. Therefore, we can minimize downtime for our applications. The next obvious improvement that we did was, hey, during restore, it's all great, but how do we ensure that the restore process itself is parallel? Previously, we did serial restores. Obviously, you know, it was a naive implementation. I/O is typically one thing that can be parallelized within the container. So we did parallel restores in RocksDB. The other key optimization in RocksDB that we considered was what we call as bulk load mode. So typically, if you're sure that you're operating a database only in write mode, because if you're bootstrapping the snapshot, all you're doing is just writes. You are not really doing reads. Then you can optimize certain characteristics of your database depending on whether the mode is bulk load or whether you have a mix of both read and write workloads. So we exploited RocksDB's bulk load mode heavily to achieve this effect. Likewise, we built another important feature, what we call as standby containers. This is actually one of my favorite features that really reduced downtimes for all our applications. The idea there was, well, we started with a naive approach where we say, hey, if a container were to fail, obviously we'll rebootstrap from the beginning from Kafka. That's one approach. The second approach, the optimization to that, we said was, hey, we'll checkpoint them incrementally, come back up on the same host we were running previously on, and only capture the delta since the previous checkpoint. That's the second approach. The third approach was we asked ourselves the question, can we go one step further? So what if we had another container that was live and running, that was periodically catching up on this data from Kafka? That way, the moment this container dies because of a host failure, you immediately can fail over to the other container. The other container is actually building up state. This was supremely important in the case of host failures, because the previous two solutions assumed that the containers would fail, but the disks were still accessible on that host, which is why, you know, you come back up on the same host, you're able to reuse that same snapshot. But there's chances where the disks themselves go down, and for this, the last solution helps. The basic idea, you have a main container, you have a standby container, keep replicating data from the main container to the standby container, and then initiate a failover whenever you're ready. So we built this feature to minimize downtime for applications with extremely rigid latency requirements. That's for the combination of local state. Now let's look at what why remote state... go ahead. Right, so I had a graph comparison with each of these optimizations that I did not add. So essentially, the biggest bang for the buck was, if there is a host failure, obviously host affinity doesn't help, right? If you can't come back up on the same host, the host itself is down. So in that case, with hot standby, the downtime is just zero, because, you know, the host is down, boom, just switch over to a new standby container, and the downtime is effectively zero. So that gave us the most bang for the buck in the case of host failures. In the case of, restores, I think host affinity was super helpful, obviously. A naive implementation would just catch up. I don't have the slide where I had the exact numbers. I can share that with you offline. So the next, feel free to ask questions. So it's very interactive, which is nice. So we'll look at why remote I/O matters. We talked about local I/O and why it's important. Obviously, not all data is local. You know, we cannot assume that every database will have a notion of a change stream. Our databases at LinkedIn have it. You know, Cassandra has it. When you write it in a strongly consistent mode, it has a notion of a change stream. We cannot assume it's true for all database systems. So obviously, there is legitimate data that's happening in databases that's local, that's remote. There could be data that's exposed by RESTly services, by REST services that's remote. There could be, at some cases, you need to write results to remote databases. For example, you build some result using SAMHSA, you know, you do some compute, some aggregate counts, you want to serve those counts to your UI, which is your web application. So for that, you need to emit those counts to a remote store. So fundamentally, there are legitimate use cases where a streaming system like SAMHSA needs to read from a remote store, and a streaming system like SAMHSA needs to emit outputs for serving results from a remote store. So these are two different use cases. So we built a class of these optimizations. We identified across all applications that we have at LinkedIn, what are some common themes that we can do to make remote table access simpler, and we identified these common concerns. If you look at stream processing system like SAMHSA, we can pretty much do up to 1 million requests per second on a host. Obviously, there's no key value store on the, because we can exploit batching constructs of Kafka extremely powerfully. You know, we can do batching and we can completely max out the network on a host. Obviously, key value stores are designed for a different reason. They can do, they cannot do a million QPS. And if you have a SAMHSA application that's writing to a key value store, we've had use cases where we pretty much brought down our key value store because SAMHSA can handle extreme scale. So in a sense, SAMHSA effectively became a DDoS system which was free for our existing key value stores that we had that actually serve member data. So what we did was we figured out, there is a problem of throttling requests, which is why we built a first-class feature, what we call as throttling or rate limiting in some sense. So the basic idea is we started with a naive implementation where if you have 10 containers, each of them get, you know, 1/10 of the quota that you're allowed to write to, and you would block throughput so that you can protect our remote stores. Obviously, it's unfair to assume equal distribution across containers. The load is, you know, rarely equal if you have hot keys and hot partitions and such. We're actually improving this by working on some form of distributed throttler where we share throttling state across all processors in the fleet. The next obvious improvement that we considered was batching. Some requests, some key value stores supported bulk writes. We wanted to exploit that. So we built a native batch API to support a KV access. There is people who were writing to a store had to do like things like retries and different retry policies and such. So we encapsulated all of that into the framework so that we can make all of application developers' life easier. And we added the native capability to do stream table join, because the fundamental problem of, hey, I have events coming in a stream, give me a lookup key, I want to look up this data in a different table. So that's the fundamental problem of stream table join. And a lot of applications were doing exactly the same thing. You know, a profile app, let's say, for example, I want to do site speed analysis. I'll have different requests coming in based on performance events from a CDN, performance events from different providers and such. I'll fundamentally need to look that up with adjunct data in a bunch of other systems. So those systems had a common key value interface. So essentially, a bunch of systems, a bunch of use cases, same problems. We standardized all of those best practices into the table API and offered this as a framework for all developers at LinkedIn. All of this is in the open source, though. So we built this. We built a first-class API for stream table join. So you can simply say, you know, I have the stream of page views. I have a member database in a table. Just join this and emit this output to a stream. Likewise, join this and emit the stream to another table. So we built this composable stream table join API that easily that application developers at LinkedIn can use. So that's a perfect segue to my next section of APIs. Historically, SAMHSA has supported a callback-driven low-level API. The problem with low-level APIs is, you know, obviously they're too low-level, so you need to, like, write code at the level of each individual message to process them. So we took a step back and saw, hey, what are some common patterns that we have across LinkedIn, and can we codify them into a really high-level API that all applications can benefit? That's what created the high-level API and a bunch of other declarative APIs on top of SAMHSA. So now our API stack looks like this. You have the low-level API where you can define operations at the level of individual messages. Obviously, it offers you extremely greater control. If you want to go as close to manipulating messages as possible, that's your friend. We found that across a bunch of use cases, people aren't really interested in dealing with individual messages. But similar to the Java Streams API, I'd like the ability to express computations at the level of streams, for example. Very similar to saying, instead of a for loop for traversing a list, can you just define the Streams API for lists? Like that. Likewise, can we do a similar Streams API for SAMHSA streams? Then we figured out across these streams, there's again a bunch of common characteristics. People want to do basic operations like windows. People want certain emission criteria. In some cases, people want to do emissions by count. In some cases, people want to do emissions by time. In time, they want to do emissions by processing time. When they process it, they want to do emissions by some criteria, depending on what's there in a given message. We codified all of these into, by integrating with Apache Beam, which is a standard programming model for doing all of this. At the topmost level, we said, hey, you know what? We have come full circle. We started with SQL like several years ago. Let's just go with SQL if you want to really nothing. So the idea there is you have a select star statement, express your logic declaratively in SQL, and the engine takes care of the rest of stuff for you. So if you're a developer, depending on the level of flexibility and feature set and control that you care about, you can use one of these APIs. Let's talk about the high-level API that I just outlined. Obviously, it's a streams-like API. If you want to do complex pipelines, if you want to repartition a Kafka topic, if you want to do stream-stream join and stream-table join operations, if you want to do different types of windows and joins, we offer the high-level API. Likewise, here's a sample application written as a high-level API. I think it might be a little bit boilerplatey, but the TLDR is you just say, I have an app, just partition by this partition function, then window it using this tumbling window constraint, then map this using this transform function and send it out to this topic. Just with 5 lines of code, we are able to build a lot more applications than, you know, if you had operations level for an individual message, you need to, you know, imagine doing a join operation, right? You have 2 different streams. You need to maintain buffer data for each of those individual streams, look up data from one stream in the other stream, figure out if that message was there, and then emit it. So all of that is being standardized as patterns in the high-level API, which you can exploit. Obviously, we thought that we built the high-level API, we were done, but you know, we were not. So there are a class of applications that demanded several ways by which you want to emit results, different types of windows, different types of joins, joins combined with other operations. And there were a class of applications that were written in non-Java languages, for example, right? So all of our data science use cases, they were primarily in Python. All of our machine learning use cases, similarly, Python. Analytics, Python, right? So we need the ability for developers we needed to empower them to use the tools that they're comfortable in and support APIs in the native language that they're comfortable with, which is why Apache Beam as a programming model is very attractive. One, it offers a lot of advanced windowing, join, and several types of these operations. And two, it offers you the ability to run, it offers you APIs in different languages. So the idea there is, you know, you write a Beam program in some language, Java, Python, or otherwise. The Beam program gets translated into some serializable representation. And the next step is, once that program is serialized, you can have your runner, in this case, SAMSA being one such runner, that can execute that serialized representation for you. So essentially, we are doing compilation from Python to byte format, and we are making the SAMSA engine understand the byte format and translate that automatically into our low-level and high-level APIs. I think a key design decision that helped us was the composability of our APIs. We had per-message APIs, we had per-stream APIs, we had even high-level APIs, and then we had Beam and then the SQL API. Each of this was built on top of the other, and composability helped quite a bit when integrating it with the Beam runner. So this is a bunch of capabilities that I was talking about. I'll not go into each of these capabilities in detail. It's there on the website. But the TLDR is, there are a bunch of operations that you can standardize on. If you want to you can all do stateless transformation, you can combine, you can split operations, you can do stateful processing. That's what you can do. You can do each of these operations in event time, where there's like different types of windows, fixed windows, sliding windows, tumbling windows, session windows. Each of them have their own characteristics and use cases. Likewise, you can keep, when you emit the output, you can emit the full output, or you can emit the delta output as to what changed since the previous time. So there's a question of the how, and there's a question of when to emit outputs, because you want to emit outputs based on whether, you know, some time has reached, based on some custom message trigger, based on a bunch of things. So we have standardized all of these capabilities by integrating with the Beam runner in SAMSA. So here's a program that's written using the Beam API. So, the TLDR is, there's a bunch of these composable operations, apply, blah, blah, blah. You can define whatever you want. You can group by, count, you can map them, you can emit results and such. And it's all, this is a pretty complex pipeline if you had to do and get right. But using Beam, you know, simplifies this to roughly like 10 lines of code with SAMSA. Likewise, it's the same program in the Python API that we use with SAMSA. So it's very similar. You're reading, extracting, windowing, computing some transform, and emitting results. And then you wait until your pipeline finishes. Likewise, so we saw how the low-level API, high-level API, Python, SQL, we added this support. Let me also briefly touch upon what we call a streaming SQL. The idea of streaming SQL is you have a declarative SQL API, and we manage code for you that you write. For example, we also built a native SQL shell in SAMSA that developers can experiment with quickly and kind of play around with data. So here's a simple SQL query. It says insert into Kafka.pageview event, where member and count star from page views group by member tumble of 5 minutes. So the previous pipeline that we saw, the entire DAG, can just be written in like 3 lines of code. This is way more declarative. You just specify what you want to do as opposed to how it's being done. And the SAMSA engine automatically takes care of parsing the SQL statement using a calcite logical plan, doing some physical, converting them to physical operators under the hood, and then executing them in a scalable manner in our cluster. And we build this as a managed service for everyone at LinkedIn. So the last but not the least, obviously we built all of these APIs. You know, you have several APIs. Now the next question is, hey, where do I run my program? There were different categories of applications. Some applications wanted the ability to run it on a multi-tenant cluster. In that case, we run stream processing as a service and we'll run their code. That's one class of applications. The other class of applications are embedded applications where they want to embed stream processing within their application itself. If you are a REST service, you want to do some stream processing within your application. So we call this as SAMSA standalone. The idea there is we embed SAMSA just as any other cluster manager, just as a simple Kafka client in your own process. So there are two modes of offering that I just outlined. The multi-tenant offering, which is where we run on Yarn, and the standalone offering where we run SAMSA as an embedded library within your own code, which you can embed. So let's maybe briefly touch upon both of those. For the multi-tenant offering, we'll use Yarn for resource management. We'll use Yarn for coordination and liveness management. Obviously, it's a multi-tenant environment. We can operate a shared cluster, drive down costs, and achieve better utilization. So it does work well for a large number of applications. Obviously, to make things work, you know, if you're offering a managed service, you also need to have operability at scale, which is why we built a bunch of features to address Yarn. The auto-scaling talk is itself a deep dive. We'll probably do one later, so I don't want to touch deeply on that. But the idea there is we monitor a bunch of metrics, monitor different triggers, and decide when we need to scale your application. So as a user, you just give us a SQL query, and we'll run it for you in the cluster. You don't have to deal with configuring capacity. You don't have to deal with all of the infrastructure gotchas. The service would run it for you. We obviously need error diagnostics. We build features to facilitate top N exceptions in your pipeline. That way it's easy. We build self-service features to reset checkpoints, to manipulate checkpoints and such. And obviously, for failure recovery, we build a feature called standby containers. All of these features, there's a great API, there's a great product, and there's a question of how you operate them at scale. And all of these features are kind of our operability toolset. Enable auto-scaling, minimal configuration, error diagnostics, self-service everywhere, and the ability to do failure recovery with standbys. And all of these enable SAMSA to operate at scale as a managed service. The second offering that we're talking about is SAMSA as an embedded library. So here the idea is you can just embed SAMSA and instantiate SAMSA within your own program and process applications, you know, process streams within your own application. When would you want to use this? Let's say you have a web service, you just want to consume events and also serve traffic. You want to control the lifecycle of the application entirely on your own. Instead of having the SAMSA framework run code, you want to control when process should start and stop. If you want greater control, if you want to embed your logic, SAMSA standalone is your friend. There are different dependencies here. We support canaries, rolling upgrades. All of these features are supported with standalone applications. Those features, we are still working to support them on Yarn. So there are two different deployment models. If you want to bring your own cluster manager, like Kubernetes, for example, you would go with standalone. If you're okay with running ourselves on Yarn, you would go with Yarn. With standalone, we have a bunch of processes in the fleet. We'll rely on Zookeeper for doing coordination, and the job coordinator would run, one of the processors would be elected as a job coordinator, and all of them would do resource assignments and coordination among themselves. Some of this would be done by Yarn in the Yarn model. So if you did not get anything here, let me just quickly do a quick summary of what the talk was and then kind of anchor some, reiterate some of the concepts. We started with the stable core. We added support for stateful processing for both local state and remote state. Bunch of key optimizations there. We added support for several languages to improve our developer productivity. Beam API was one. We added declarative support with SQL. We added Python to support machine learning and data science use cases. Then we found that users wanted to embed SAMHSA within their own application, which is why, and essentially use SAMHSA as you would for a Kafka consumer, right? You instantiate a Kafka consumer, consume events. What can I do the same with SAMHSA? That was the question that we got. To address that, we built SAMHSA standalone, and obviously operating a scalable platform requires you to also have operability at scale, which is why we built features like auto-scaling, error diagnostics, and self-service to complete the picture and build a more robust product. I think that's it. So hopefully it was useful. It's a fast-paced talk. We could easily deep dive into a bunch of those things, and I'm happy to answer questions. I'm always happy to chat offline and learn more from you guys. Thank you.